Bill brings you a triple bill of dramas based on the novels of Walter Scott, starting this week with The Fair Maid of Perth, starring David Tennant as Walter Scott.
Among all the provinces in Scotland, if any intelligent stranger were asked to describe the most varied and the most beautiful, it is probable that they would name the county of Perth. Perth is the place where the conquering Romans recognised the Tiber and the magnificent Tay, where the Saxons of the plain and the clans of the mountains endured many a desperate and bloody encounter. And it is in Perth where we shall begin our story. In the final years of the 14th century, when the Scottish sceptre was swayed by the gentle but feeble hand of Robert III, and when the only authority known to command the hearts of lawless men was to be found not in a ruler's decree or the divine governance of the church, but in the supreme, all-conquering power of a woman's beauty. We present The Fair Maid of Perth by Walter Scott. Adapted for radio by Scott Cherry.
Oh, slow down, Catherine. Please. Oh, I can't keep up.
Sorry, Father.
One moment.
Are you all right?
Why such haste, child?
Sorry. Do you need to sit?
No. I just need a moment to recover my strength, which has abandoned me of late. Oh. We should continue.
Are you sure?
Aye, come on. Take my arm. That's it. Not like you to be the hurry for Mass. Oliver?
Simon?
Catherine?
As her father continues into the church, Catherine's eyes searched anxiously around her. Where was he, the young man who'd been following her for days, and was behind her just now?
One moment, fair maid. I can contain myself no longer.
Let go of me, sir.
Sweet
Allow
Catherine.
Me to follow my father.
Fair Catherine, the sweetest saint in the calendar, and yet the most obdurate. How do you answer for tormenting the heart that loves you so dearly?
It becomes you not to behave thus, my lord. You do not know me.
I know that you are a glover's daughter.
Sir.
And that you are the most beautiful creature that I've ever seen, and that you are forced to endure the attentions of low fools wishing to convince you that they're noblemen.
Release my hand.
Then release my heart by agreeing to appear at your chamber window tomorrow as the sun peeps over the eastern hills on what will be the dawning of St. Valentine's Day.
It can be any day it chooses, sir. I will not do as you ask.
Obey my will.
Catherine!
And I swear, by all that's holy, I will make you my queen.
Oh. Where are you?
Till tomorrow, fair maid.
Who's that?
Till St. Valentine's Day!
A madman?
The service has started. Come.
This was an age as famous for its chivalry as for its brutality. A time when the worship of beauty was an accepted species of idolatry, and the attentions of a wealthy nobleman could grant a woman untold riches. A prospect which might well have dazzled the fair maid, had she not resolved to confine her conquests to those from within her own sphere. A decision which some found rather worrying.
The nobleman who spoke to you this morning at church, was he someone you knew?
No.
But you were courteous?
As he was to me.
Meaning?
He was discourteous.
So were you discourteous to him? And do you think it becomes a glover's daughter to be short with a man who was clearly of the highest rank? Connachar?
Sir?
Is it your hope that I should die of thirst? More liquor!
Sir?
At least my apprentice obeys me.
I obey you, sir.
I do not think so.
Then would you have me welcome the attentions of a man who, although he called me the sweetest of saints, grabbed me roughly by the arm and tried to force his hand upon me?
Outside church.
This nobleman, this man who was clearly of the highest rank, despite his honeyed words, wanted me for his jade.
Oh, you know I would not have you compromise your honour, and if what you say is true, then I do not wish that you treated him in any other way.
Why would it not be true?
Oh, I'm sure it is. But why is it that every man who seeks to impress you or win just the smallest place in your affections, no matter how respectful, is always, in your eyes, insufficient? It worries me. It worries me, my child, because the fates would have me leave you. We've spoken of this. Times grow hard. We've got little work.
There's some.
What?
The master of the horses wants doublets for his men.
Oh, well.
I'm embroidering hawking gloves for the Lady Drummond.
We're making gauntlets for the Duke of Albany.
Which will keep us busy for how long? There was a time when I'd half a dozen apprentices working here. What do I pay you, Conacher?
Enough.
You get a roof over your head and the chance to learn a trade. Little more. This is a cruel and lawless world, Catherine.
Father.
The king's weak. It's only a matter of time before the clans come pouring down from the mountains to murder us all.
It's not the clans you need to worry about. It's the English.
Ugh, the English. The nobles. The Highlanders.
My people threaten no one.
Only because they're too busy threatening each other.
I'll take the plate.
Why did you say that?
Scotland bleeds. And the clans are as much to blame as the nobles. Ah, who is this?
Will someone open the door? It's Henry Smith.
Thought he was away, selling his weapons of war. Catherine, you see to him.
What?
I'm awful weary.
I can see light from a candle, so I know you're up. And I'd say if Simon the Glover has any wish to preserve his daughter's honour, not to say her very life, then he should forgo any inclination he may have to pretend he's in his bed and open the door.
Henry.
Well, we thought you were away.
I was, but now I'm back.
The Glover looked on as his daughter and the blacksmith exchanged their secret looks. He'd known for some time of their feelings for one another, and had assumed Henry had come to ask Catherine to attend the coming celebrations as his Valentine. But when he heard Henry speak of preserving her honour, not to say her very life, and when he saw the broadsword and dirk hanging at the blacksmith's side, he knew something more serious was afoot.
You must leave Perth as soon as you can, Catherine. The Earl of March's men are in Couvreview Street asking where you live.
Why?
They're accusing you of harlotry and say you must be punished.
Oh, is this some kind of joke?
Open up! Open up! Open up in the name of the promised! We come to arrest the vile temptress known as Catherine Glover!
Oh! Hey, Catherine! Bring me my sword, then go and hide in your chamber!
But, Father!
Did you bolt the door?
We come on behalf of the Lord Provost!
We come to arrest Catherine Glover for offences against God in a church!
Bow down before the servants of the Lord!
Put down your sword and I swear by all that's holy and true, none of you will live to see another day! Put down your swords! First man to make another step will answer to this blade!
You dare challenge our authority?
What authority? Who sent you here? The provost or the church? You seem undecided in the matter.
Is that her?
Aye, that's the Jezebel who sought to distract the prince from his devotion.
What?
Simon, wait with Catherine in her chamber and leave these rogues to me.
You wish to lose your life trying to save a harlot?
Aye, he does. And so do I.
What's this?
A healing boy.
Walking on his hind legs. Well, there's a sign.
Yes!
Go to your chamber.
I won't leave you. All of you, stop! Save your blood! If I'm to appear before the provost, then I will go willingly. But only if you stop your fighting. Henry! What's the charge?
We're standing on the sanctified ground of Blackfriars Church. You did offer our royal prince certain favours in return for money.
I did no such thing.
We've witnesses.
Who was the man outside church?
I don't know, but I never offered him any favours.
Take her.
Ready, Conica?
Aye.
Wait! I'll go with you.
Oh, no,
to see what the provost makes of your witnesses, whoever they may be.
Catherine, they won't take you to the provost.
The lion, Catherine.
Take her! Well, what are you waiting for?
Listen. I asked some of our citizens to raise a watch. Oh.
It would seem we too have witnesses.
We've dallied long enough. Bring the girl and meet me by the bridge.
But there's a mob out there.
Good God, I'll do it.
Let go!
You're coming with us.
Let her go!
Oh, take me instead. If you don't take your hand away, you'll be leaving without it.
You wouldn't dare. Come!
Leave my daughter alone.
Out of the way, old man.
Oh, Father, no!
Let her go!
Ah! What's going on?
They've hurt my father.
Out of our way!
Call the doctor!
Move.
My father's hurt.
Come on. Stop! Stop, I say! I am Oliver Proudfoot! And in the power vested in me by the proud citizens of the Borough of Perth, I order you to stop! Up and chase, neighbours! Up and chase!
Simon.
Father.
Master.
Father. Please.
Promise me you'll forgo the world of men and do God's bidding.
I promise. No. No, Father. Please, no. God in heaven, no!
The Scottish court had been in Perth but a year, turning the ancient priory, God's holy house, into nothing more than an unruly den of ruffians and thieves. A day did not pass without the nobles performing some new outrage against the common people, showing their contempt for a king they considered too infirm and timid of nature to bring them to account. This was a time when Scottish justice lay in exile, as if outlawed.
Hear that, Stephen?
Yes, my lord.
She heard me. She answered back. And again. Here, lady. Back you come. Back to your master.
Uncle! There you are.
That's it.
Uncle! I need to talk to you. I need your help.
One moment.
You must petition the king on my behalf.
Shh! She's stopping. Do you think she's seen another rabbit?
Possibly, my lord.
Have you ever seen a more glorious creature, nephew? See how she hangs in the air, like an angel.
I'm in trouble, uncle.
You instructed your men to seize a girl and ended up killing her father.
It wasn't me. It was the Earl of March. He wants me to marry his daughter. And you know how the king, my father, is subject to his power.
The king, your father, is subject to everyone's power. She's coming!
Uncle! Here, lady! Here I am!
That's it! Come to my hand! Come to my...
Dear God!
Well done! Stephen!
Your lordship!
Take her and make sure she's fed. You have plenty of mice in your bag?
Aye.
Off you go, your ladyship. Forgive me, but I must attend to my nephew's latest act of stupidity.
Hungry? It wasn't stupidity, uncle. It's not my fault, the Earl of March.
What did you say?
My throat.
You're heir to the throne. Everyone hopes one day you'll be king, control the nobles, destroy the clansmen, beat back the English. What do you do? Walk the streets of Perth in search of women. Who is this girl?
A glover's daughter.
Ugh. Is it any wonder the Earl of March is offended?
I love her, Uncle.
You to marry his daughter?
I hate her. She hates me.
You'll learn to love each other.
Never.
For the sake of Scotland.
I found the woman I wish to make my queen. And if you could see her, Uncle, she's more beautiful than the goddess Hera.
Dear God.
The Earl was hurt during the fighting. He'll blame me. My father listens to you. You're his brother.
Oh, no.
Don't leave me. Uncle! You see your angel in a falcon's wings. I see mine in a fair maid's eyes.
God in heaven.
I will be king, and the glover's daughter will be my queen. Proud fathers of this great city.
And so, whilst the prince sought to save himself from his father's wrath, the good citizens of Perth met to demand justice for the death of Catherine's father.
Can any of us believe what has happened?
Personages of no little consequence, in black velvet cloaks and heavy gold chains, united in grief and outrage, were waiting to be enlightened by the man declaring himself to be Catherine's saviour. One Oliver Proudfoot, bonnet maker.
What a tragic and appalling night. To lose our esteemed and much-loved friend, Simon Glover. And when I think what might have happened had I not arrived and driven the perpetrators to seek their escape. Neighbours, it is too hard for flesh and blood to bear.
But is it any wonder?
Neighbour Craig Daly?
Is it any wonder the scoundrels from the mountains confront us when the breaches in our walls lie unrepaired?
Was Connachar there? The Highland boy.
Doubtless he was behind it. Yes. I told Simon he wasn't to be trusted.
No.
Eh? He's an honest lad.
This wasn't the work of clansmen. I was there and Connachar fought valiantly by my side.
Henry Smith speaks true. Both he and Connachar were present, but had I not arrived with brothers Balneaves and Christison, who will attest to this, I'm sure, the rogues would doubtless have succeeded in their quest to seize poor Catherine and take her away.
They weren't Highlanders. They were nobles.
How do you know?
Clansmen take the form of wolves and deer. Who's to say they can't assume the shape of noblemen?
Neighbours, we've proof the outlaws were nobles.
What proof?
This. This. Fellow citizens of Perth, is the evidence we will be presenting to the king to secure justice.
Look at that.
You see before you the severed hand of our dear friend's murderer. The hand that sought to drag Catherine from the safety of her home. The hand, gentlemen, that struck poor Simon to the ground, bringing about his tragic and untimely death.
Well, let's take a look.
It's a nobleman's, all right. Not a Highlander.
Look, it's fine as a lady's.
See the ring?
Man of great wealth.
These fingers have never known drudgery, that's for sure.
And how did this nobleman come to lose his hand? Who cut it off?
I did.
What?
When he refused to let Catherine go.
You're aware, Henry, I'm sure, that there are strict laws prohibiting such acts of mutilation.
Andrew, the rogue was attempting to drag the girl away.
But what if he denies it?
He can't deny he struck poor Simon to the ground and killed him.
Simon was already sick, and with King Robert's court in Perth, for all we know, this could be the hand of an earl.
It is the hand of an earl.
The Earl of March.
The Earl of...
I know his face. Saw him fight a tournament on the North Inch Fields.
Are you saying, Henry, that you confronted the Earl of March, engaged him in mortal combat, and chopped off one of his hands?
He wants the prince to marry his daughter, but it seems the prince is besotted with Catherine. Citizens, if the Earl had taken her, we'd never have seen her again.
Which is why
We must go to the Priory, raise the king from his royal rest, throw down this bloody token, and demand from his grace's royal lips whether it be just and honest that we, his loving lieges, should be attacked by the knights and nobles of his court. Well? Brothers!
Friends! If you're unwilling to seek justice because you fear the Earl of March, then I will see the king on my own.
No! Henry, you'll never leave the Priory alive.
If anyone should address the king, it's Catherine.
Aye.
This could be the fault of her lightness or folly.
Aye. Catherine should see the king.
What did you say? Why are you suggesting that I should seek an audience with the king? John?
Catherine, we're so sorry to hear about your dear father.
Why should I visit the king when I have no wish for justice? If I've suffered at the hands of those of a higher rank, it's not for me to imitate their vices and pursue vengeance. They may take pleasure in the shedding of blood. I shall be content to thank God for my lowliness, knowing it secures me from a similar temptation.
You hear that, Henry?
If you have any respect or affection for my father's memory, I would ask you to honour him by doing nothing.
But Catherine...
You more than anyone, Henry Smith. My father often spoke of the way you earned your living. Attiring men for battle and war. And it appalled him. If Henry's a good man... He would say, if Henry Smith is a good man, then how can he be content to exploit the vehemence of these times by filling his purse with the tears of widows and orphans? I would ask you, more than anyone, to honour my father by not troubling the king.
But, Catherine, what will you do?
Nothing.
The Earl might return.
I will obey my father's dying wish. Give myself over to God.
And what of you, Henry? If anyone's in danger,
the Earl will want vengeance.
You must leave Perth.
Flee Scotland.
Henry?
Catherine had often told him of her father's disapproval and had asked him many times to quit his life as an armourer, but always with a warmth in her words and, he'd allowed himself to believe, love in her heart. But now her words seemed cold and her heart empty of all feeling.
O man am fechan riven og foski and ari Rinam fa salavnech misk achivano samalchun chunerog.
Stop there. Oh, manaman fechan. What does it mean?
Well,
manaman fechan.
O manam fechan ribanog.
What's it mean? What's it saying?
See, O my soul, the virgin fair. Or the fair virgin?
No, virgin fair's good. Sing on.
Foski and arig rinam fla.
Which means?
Beside the monarch of the grove.
Grove, woods, trees, forest. Monarch of the grove will have to do. And on.
Salavniach misk.
One moment, fair troubadour. It would appear that we are about to be interrupted.
Your Majesty, my liege, forgive us for intruding in this way.
Gentlemen, please. There's nothing to forgive, I assure you. Who am I, after all? If I'm the king, then I'm the worst there ever was. Or so I'm told. You find me attempting to cure our songs of the Highland tongue. O carev me, we tau nanalit, has become...
O lay me near the brooks which move.
So gently near the spreading tree.
Well?
Your Majesty, I wonder if you could dismiss your minstrel with serious matters to discuss.
My lord, the Earl of Mount.
Your Grace.
Your hand is missing.
That is what we wish to discuss, brother. In private.
Girl.
My liege.
I want you to write a ballad about a Scottish king. A good and honest man, but the one without the chivalrous love of war and peril, or the eager desire to distinguish himself by dangerous achievements, which every age expects from those of noble birth. And this will be his tragedy, that such a king, refusing to fix his eyes on the fame and temporalities of this frail and passing life, had as his subjects a fierce, ungovernable people, and a kingdom the very picture of cruelty and lawlessness, the north torn to pieces by untamed clansmen, the south by treacherous nobles, and a brother, a younger, stronger, more warlike brother, upon whom this king would dote, and constantly forgive for his many acts of treachery and betrayal. Can you write such a song?
Aye, my liege.
Then speak, brother, that my minstrel may find her inspiration.
I come, sire, to mediate. In the hope that this latest outrage will not prompt severe measures against thy son and my dear nephew.
Outrage?
My hand!
The prince, we know, is young and in the heyday of his blood.
He's gone too far, my liege. This time, your son has gone too far by showing his contempt for my daughter and his disdain for you, his loving father.
The prince has let it be known that he wishes to live according to the rules of the Livre de Chevalerie and, in the spirit of his great hero, Alexander, choose his wife.
Your Majesty.
He gave me his word. On bended knee, he assured me that he would cease all talk of courtly love and no longer see himself as a Lancelot in search of his Guinevere. And he insisted that he would be content, supremely content, my Lord of March, to marry your daughter.
Well, it would seem he's chosen another to be his Guinevere. A glover's daughter.
Who, he claims, is more beautiful than the goddess Hera.
It was once trying to take the girl that I... lost my...
Very well. Very well. If my son refuses to marry your daughter, then he won't. He can marry the Earl of Douglas's daughter instead.
Brother?
But
my liege?
The Earl of Douglas's?
I'm sorry, my Lord of March, but these are difficult times. The English threaten, and it suits me to keep the Earl of Douglas, guardian of our borders, happy and loyal. He'd hoped to make the match, and, as you know, my son is convinced his daughter is descended from a narwhal, or giant seal. He loathes her even more than he loathes your daughter, so this will be his punishment, to marry a whale.
Brother!
And if he disobeys, he'll spend the rest of his days breathing the air of a castle dungeon.
But my lord!
A different song, fair minstrel. Let's have the tragic lament of Carol, son of the Morvern King. Begin in the mountain tongue.
My liege.
One moment, minstrel. I beg you, my lord, allow me to speak my mind. The English are busy dealing with the Welsh. The threat to Scotland comes from within, from the Highland Kern, who I, your devoted subjects, struggle to contain, and from the Earl of Douglas himself, a man whose love of rapine knows no limit, who never puts foot in stirrup, but 1,000 of his barbarous Galwegians mount with him, and why? That he might overawe the other nobles, and some say, should opportunity arise, and trap thee, my gracious lord.
He speaks true, brother, which is why I must keep the Earl of Douglas happy.
But he's already kin. He's married to your daughter.
Sing of Fingal's son, fair Troubadour.
Your Majesty, I beg.
No more. Away.
Your Majesty.
And tight chamron and creature cool, ergunia.
This had been a lesson King Robert had been quick to learn. That he could never allow himself warm feelings or tender affections. That his throne was nothing more than a lofty, barren rock. That he could never fold his brother to his heart or display fondness for his son. This he called the doom of greatness.
His Majesty does me great wrong.
My Lord of March, calm yourself.
To keep favouring the Earl of Douglas in this way. Well, I too have a love of vengeance, Albany. I too wear the keys of Scotland at my belt and will welcome in the English army ere the week be out.
You're talking treachery.
I might only have the one hand, but I can still wield the blade.
Shh, are you mad?
That I must tell my beloved Marjorie that she's been preferred to a whale.
The marriage between the prince and Douglas' daughter will not take place. I give you my word. Now put back your sword. I promise you'll have all the retribution you desire. Vengeance on the clans that rob you, the prince who shames your beloved daughter, and the blacksmith who deprived you of your hand.
Henry! Henry, wait!
Oliver?
One moment, my good friend. One moment. By your direction, I guess you're going to the house of the much-missed Simon Glover.
I am.
To see Catherine.
Aye.
May I ask why? Forgive me, Henry. I'll speak plain. We know each other to be honest men, which is why I believe we've remained such good and loyal friends.
Indeed.
You know me to be a warm-hearted man, one who loves those he likes. Old Simon for his generosity and hot temper. You, Henry, for your courage and honesty.
Friend,
And Catherine. I love her, Henry. I always have. I'd planned to ask her to be my Valentine, but, well, we all know how she adores you. If you go in the hope that you might recover her favour, and I sincerely hope you do, because you're a fine man, the best armourer that ever made a sword, and the bravest soldier that ever drew one, while I,
Oliver, please,
can only hope to express my valour by making hats. I merely wish to say, should Catherine be fool enough to spurn the valiant blacksmith, I hope that he will be generous enough to commend the modest but not insignificant virtues of the humble bonnet maker.
He will.
Oh, good. Oh, thank you, dear friend. I must go and keep an eye on the celebrations. Oh, it's a cold night for Valentine's.
Indeed.
The Earl of March may be about. I'll keep an eye on Simon's house for both your sakes.
Oliver, wait.
Yes?
If you're to keep the peace, you need to be armed. Have this.
What?
Here. Take my sword.
No.
No, oh, come on.
Henry, I couldn't.
Come on, stand still. Stand here.
Right.
Be still.
Yes?
By the time the friends parted, the streets of Perth had become a carnival. Those not mourning the death of Simon Glover, knowing that Lent would soon be upon them with its fasts and deprivations, were determined to celebrate Valentine's Day with as much ale and wine as they could procure. Young revellers played at football, or joined the Morris dancers for a quick skip or a hectic reel, whilst the older, more sober citizens were content to sit and hearken to the amorous, wanton music of the minstrels. Some of which was good, but some,
my dog and I, we have a trick.
Some less so.
To face the maze when they are sick. When they are sick and like to die. Or thither to come, my dog and I. And when I die, as needs must have, then bury me under the good ale tap. With folded arms, they'll let me lie. Sing for down, my dog and I.
Perth laughs while my father lies cold in the parlour.
Aye.
Why have you come?
To see you.
Why?
Because you're not safe.
Nor are you. You in this world, Henry, are bound for hell.
I didn't kill your father.
I asked you not to fight. I asked you all not to fight.
If it'd taken you, do you think you'd still be alive?
Despair's a sin, I know. But I no longer care if I live or die. Connachar.
I've said goodbye to your father.
Thank you.
I like to think he heard me. Father Clement's here with the mourners.
I'll come and pay them.
I'm sorry I can't be here for the funeral.
Your family needs you. You must go.
Something wrong? The nobles have declared war on the clans. They say they're going to run us into the sea. I must go and fight with my father and brothers. Well, your father and I argued, but I loved him, as I know he loved me. I must go. I'll tell you something, blacksmith. I'd have given up living among you Sassenachs long ago, but for a dream, a foolish hope, that Catherine and I would one day run away together to the world's end, stand before the black stones of Iona, and in the temple of sacred vows, she'd consent to become my wife. But I always knew she loved another. Slán na cumann cuimh na hoia. Eh? Fare thee well. Marry me. Catherine?
I'm to do as my father wished. Surrender myself to God. Seek forgiveness for my sins.
Sins? It's not your fault your father died.
It is. I forswore humility. I thought of no one but myself.
No, Catherine.
I was told to cover my face, avoid the eyes of men. But I defied him and succumbed to the most serious temptation of them all. The devil's own.
No.
Pride. And there's still an obstinacy in my heart, Henry, even though God's punished me by taking my father's life. I will do as my father requested. Resolve to live the consecrated life. Father Clement says if I betroth myself to Christ, I can hasten my father's journey through the purifying fire. I'm to join the sisters at the Elko Nunnery. And belong to no man.
Christ was a man.
And the Son of God, who suffered to make us feel for all who suffer at the hands of men like you.
Ah, I see. Then you would have me make bonnets like Oliver Proudfoot, or perhaps join with Peter Bailey and his wife in the making of pots. This world of blood and quarrels is not of my making, Catherine.
Ah, it is.
I help those who suffer protect themselves. Very well. I can see your thoughts, sir. Too much fitted for heaven to be wasted on a man who fills his purse with tears of widows and orphans. It would be like robbing a holy shrine to succeed in surprising your affections.
Henry.
How could I ever think that you'd have a place in your heart for a coarse, ignorant, borrowed man like me? I'll pay my respects to your father, then go. Happy Valentine's Day.
Henry, wait.
What?
You do have a place in my heart. But can't you see?
Henry! Henry, they've killed Oliver! The nobles have killed Oliver Proudfoot!
Oh,
looks like he's been struck from behind.
Oh, who'd do such a thing?
The Earl of March.
Hey, Oliver was walking round telling everyone he was the blacksmith.
Oliver?
He's wearing Henry's jerkin.
Where is he?
What's happened?
They thought it was you, Henry.
We told you you weren't safe, and now look what's happened.
They beat Oliver to death thinking he was you.
What?
All because you deprived the Earl of his hand.
Oh, dear God.
What have they done to him?
Brained him. They've escaped.
What?
We think it was the Earl of March's men.
It was. I saw them strike Oliver with a Loch Abber axe.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable. They ran off across the high street. I chased after back.
And you recognise them for sure?
Aye.
One of them was with the Earl when they killed your father, Catherine.
This is what happens, Catherine.
What? This is what happens when you catch a prince's eye.
What do you mean?
It's not Catherine's fault.
Aye, it is.
Aye. How many times were you told to cover your face?
You watch what you say.
How many times were you warned about the dangers of exciting men's admiration?
You don't know what you're talking about, you fool.
No, it's true. She speaks true.
Who are you calling a fool? I let her.
Calm yourself.
She speaks true.
Don't tell me to calm myself. You're the one that started it all.
What?
Please, don't.
Stop, stop.
Hey, we must fight amongst ourselves. Oh. The true villains are the nobles.
Aye. Aye. It's the nobles. We'll carry Oliver's body to the king's presence.
Aye.
And demand that he take his court out of Perth and back to Edinburgh where they belong.
Aye.
Come, whilst we still have blood in our veins.
Aye. Aye.
Ring the bell.
Aye.
The king will hear the distresses of decent people whether he likes it or not.
Aye.
Catherine?
We'll march with the provost at our head and we'll tear down the holy gates if we have to.
Catherine?
Be careful.
Where's Catherine? Connachar? I don't know. She was here. She was... Where did she go?
She'd been standing at his side, standing right next to him. And then, in an instant...
Catherine!
...was gone.
I'll head this way. You go back into town. Catherine!
Henry ran into the high street where the people were still celebrating, unaware of Oliver's murder.
Catherine! Has anyone seen Catherine? Catherine Glover! You saw her.
And then, in the distance, above all the noise...
Henry!
...from the far side of the city...
Henry, help me!
Catherine!
He ran as fast as he could, down narrow lanes, stumbling through dark shadows, and then on into pitch-black darkness.
Catherine! Where are you? Catherine, answer!
Henry! Henry, I saw her being taken.
Where?
She was taken by men on horseback.
Did you recognise them?
Aye.
Your Majesty.
Brother.
A mob are approaching the Priory gates. They're saying a man has been murdered during the Valentine's celebrations. They're carrying his body as proof.
They're calling someone's name.
It would seem a woman was taken against her will. The Glover's daughter.
They're saying Bolingbroke has won the English crown and wishes to steep his sword in Scottish blood. Well, let him come. Let him come. I shall be waiting and will fight such a battle the nobles will have no choice but to make me king. And then you, sweetest Catherine, will be my queen.
My lord. My lord, the people are at the gates demanding the Glover's daughter be returned.
Then bring my horses to the side of the chapter house.
Sire.
We must make our escape. I would uncover your mouth and let you speak, dearest Catherine, but I fear you may alert my father. You'll learn to love me, I swear, just as the Amazonian queen Antiope, taken against her will, grew to love the mighty Theseus. I kiss thy cheek. And thus... am I inspired to do deeds of worldly valour? I told you to bring the horses from the stables! Who are you?
Untie the lady.
Where's my servant? You dare threaten a royal prince?
Untie the lady and let her go, or by this sword, I swear.
Be not afraid, my love.
Untie her mouth. Has he hurt you?
No.
Hurt her? Come. Our friends are waiting at the gate.
One moment, my good sir. You know, I'm sure...
You're hurting my arm.
You must realise that if you're to claim the lady as your own, then the laws and rules of chivalry demand that the only way you can win her loyalty and affection... is by fighting. And so it was. In Roman times, the beautiful Lavinia suffered the attentions of the Ozonian men. Which is why you, Turnus, ruler of the Rutuli, seek her for your bride. And I, the noble Aeneas, an hauberk of glittering mail, cast off your sword. And with one quick blow to your neck.
Henry, no!
Deprive you of all life.
Deprive me of all life? How can that be, noble Aeneas? When you're the one who's lost his sword. I shall deprive you of all life for causing the untimely death of this lady's father.
Henry.
Bringing about the murder of a dear friend struck from behind by a coward's axe.
No.
You can't hurt me. The mighty Jupiter will anoint me with ambrosia and nectar, thus making me immortal.
Well, let's hope he's listening.
Henry, no! Kill the prince and we'll all die. Spare him, I beg you.
Don't listen to her, blacksmith. As your king, I command you, rid me of my antic son. End his life and end my suffering.
Brother?
Father. Uncle.
Fear not, nephew. We'll dispose of the rogue. Andrew?
That we will.
My lord.
You and your men, take the prince away.
What? Father.
Arrest my son.
But... Brother!
He's to be deprived of all liberty, bound in chains, kept in perpetual night.
No!
Fed on nothing but bread and water.
Catherine!
Don't be afraid, my boy. I'm sure your many gods will sustain you.
No!
Your Majesty, the prince is not to blame. This witch has cast a spell, turned his mind from the Earl's daughter. Look into her eyes. Look. See how the devil lives inside her.
The devil lives inside you, my lord, for saying such a thing.
How dare you!
Hold.
Hold, brother, or by my son's sword. Well, well. I, too, am transformed. I, too, am an Alexander. Come, brother. Let's fight.
No!
Come. This is your chance to seize the crown. You can claim I died at the hands of the blacksmith.
Brother!
No. Then go tell the people of Perth that we are leaving and that reparations will be made for the crimes committed against them by all members of my court. Go.
Your Majesty.
Lower your blade.
My liege.
You. Stand before your king, that he may behold thy fatal beauty.
I'm no witch, my noble lord.
Yet I see why my son has lost his wits.
I beg you, show mercy. This man saved my life.
And deprived an earl of his hand. Men have died for less.
Simon Glover and Oliver Proudfoot died for nothing.
You sought to save the lady twice?
Aye.
Because you love her? True chivalry. And do you love him? Well?
With all my heart. But my lord, on bended knee, I implore you. Grant us our liberty, but if only one may go free, let it be Henry Smith. My vanity.
No, 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 let her go, my lord. I entreat you, release Catherine and let the Earl do what he will. Let me take my sword and end my life, but let the lady go. I beg of thee.
It had been said by the Council of Elders that the great and numerous defects in the governing of Scotland were from a king too easily persuaded to mild and gentle courses. When they told Robert this, it hurt him, deeply. But he'd consoled himself by thinking that mild and gentle courses were, after all, the Christian way, and that if God did not wish him to control the fate of his poor, tormented country, then he might at least be permitted to exercise his judgment over smaller matters.
Stand up, both of you, and go in peace. I promise you will never suffer the attentions of my son again. But as for you, blacksmith, you must understand that the Earl of March, regardless of any promises or assurances he may make, will never do my bidding. Now go.
God bless you, Majesty. My lord.
So, you're leaving Perth?
Aye.
How far's the nunnery?
I'll be there by nightfall.
You told the king that you loved me with all your heart.
So I do.
Then why go?
There's another I must love.
There are other ways that you can show your devotion.
How? When a woman is not permitted to speak of God lest she appear as one who would teach. How often has Father Clement told us that women are too easily seduced and such determined seducers that we cannot be witnesses to divine grace? If I talked openly of God's love, I'd be punished as a heretic.
I'm a man of peace, Catherine. I've sold the forge, bought myself another business.
Where?
Here, in Perth. Henry Smith is now Henry Glover. Well, if you're to make the nunnery by nightfall, I'll carry your bags to the end of the road.
You bought my father's house. They didn't tell me that it was you. Why didn't they tell me it was you? You paid too much.
I know, but...
And you know nothing of glove making.
Catherine, can you not send word to the Holy Sisters that you've been delayed? Just for a day or two? So that you might stay and teach me what you can? What do I know about buckskin and deerhide? Huh? I could stay till tomorrow.
I'll carry my own bag.
I'll walk you to the edge of the town.
Henry Smith. Why didn't they say it was you?
It's not Henry Smith, huh? It's Henry Glover.
They walked up through Blackfriars, round Kinkarochi, past the road that led all the way to Scoon, and it was only when they got to the end of Couvreview Street that Catherine finally relented and agreed to stay. Just for a week, just so that she could teach him about the ordering of buckskin and deer hide, and of the intricacies of the cross stitch and the overstitch, and of the many dangers and hazards of wire embroidery. And, in truth, it wasn't long before Henry was yearning for the roar of the furnace and the clatter of the anvil. But when he realised the week had come and gone, and that Catherine wasn't going to leave, he didn't much care. They were married before the summer was out, and never did the corporations of glovers and hammermen trip their dance so featly in glorious celebration of the wedding and of the welcome retreat of King Robert's ignoble court. And King Robert? Did he stay a brave Alexander and go on to commit daring deeds of worldly valour? Well, no. Growing ever weary, he surrendered all power and retired to his lands in the west, where, one bright summer's day, standing on the battlements of Dundonald Castle, listening to his minstrels sing of fine ladies and their noble paramours, the gentle Robert asked if she could compose a song about a woman believed by many to be the most beautiful in the whole of Scotland. A romantic ballad, in the old style, to be called The Fair Maid of Perth, and to be written in the ancient tongue.
Was cake and arig, lean and flach, salash nyacht piska given yach, smiath yul hul, eroica grahi.
In The Fair Maid of Perth, Morven Christie played Catherine Glover, Hugh Ross, her father, Brian Larkin, Henry Smith, Clive Russell, King Robert, Kenneth Cranham, the Earl of March, Forbes Masson, Oliver Proudfoot, Callum O'Neill, Connacher, Olivia Morgan, Louise the Minstrel, and Richard Hansel, a citizen, with David Tennant as Walter Scott. All other parts were played by members of the cast. Ruth Wall sang and played Gaelic harp, and the music was composed and performed by Ross Hughes and Esben Chalva. The Fair Maid of Perth by Walter Scott was adapted for radio by Scott Cherry, produced and directed by Clive Brill, and was a Pacificus production for BBC Radio 4.